I think there are definitely roles available to people within cybersecurity. There would be a role that you'd be suited for because of the multifaceted, multidisciplinary nature of cybersecurity these days and how it is getting embedded into everyday life. So all industries need cybersecurity. And so it's really communicating to young people, understanding of cybersecurity, that's not just being in hoodies and hacking away, but there are other things that you can do.
You're listening to KBCast, the cybersecurity podcast for all executives. Cutting through the jargon and hype to understand the landscape where risk and technology meet. Now, here's your host, Carissa Breen.
Joining me today is Adam Henry, Senior Advisor from Social Cyber Group. And today we're discussing the future of cybersecurity education in Australia. So Adam, thanks for joining. You are the man to be speaking to about cyber education. So I'm really excited to talk to you today to understand a little bit more about your insights and your knowledge.
Thanks for having me. No, it's really great. It's definitely a passion of mine, cyber education. So really happy to talk about it to anyone who will listen.
Well, there's definitely a fair few people listening to this podcast, so I think this is a great place to start. So on that note, I want to get your thoughts on the education space we have for Australians to learn about cybersecurity. Like, I just want to start with just tell me everything and then we can sort of get into it a little bit more detail.
I think the first point I'd make is cyber education as a field is brand new and is expanding and evolving. People's understanding of cybersecurity and the importance of cybersecurity as a whole, not even just the education part, but just an understanding of cybersecurity within organizations has definitely developed over the last decade. I had talked with the government a number of years ago, probably about 8 years ago, around the importance of cybersecurity education, and they just didn't understand why it was important because they didn't really understand the importance of cybersecurity. And I think the breaches and the understanding associated and the media coverage of cybersecurity has actually gone to improve the exposure of cybersecurity and what it is and why it is actually important. So that's probably the first thing, is that it's definitely evolving. The other aspect of cybersecurity education is it's like talking about cybersecurity, it's kind of like talking about medicine, and people do use this analogy. You have different people in different roles. So in medicine, you know, most people know you'd have a GP, general practitioner, you have nurses, you have specialists who specialize in certain aspects, you have policy development people, everything like that. So cybersecurity is very much like that field where you have multiple people in multiple roles. So you can't just learn cybersecurity and then you're done. It's not plumbing. There are many, many aspects to cybersecurity, different roles. And that's where the field is definitely expanded. And the education aspect may not have caught up as much as it could in that space. So what I mean by that is, it's been explicitly a technical field for a long time, and a lot of people's focus on the education aspects was technical. But now we know that there's a multifaceted, multidisciplinary aspects of cybersecurity. So you look at management, you look at international relations, you look at policy development, as I mentioned. All those aspects are critical in cybersecurity. So you might be a technical expert. I would argue, and I have in a lot of my research and in my papers and articles that I've written, is that that's just as important as being an international, having cybersecurity international relations experience and being an expert in that field. So perfect example of that is we have an ambassador for cybersecurity, Tobias Fieker, who's actually in the process of retiring, moving on from that role. He was in that role for 6 years and instrumental in the international relations space in developing policies and procedures and helping out developing nations and things like that in that space. So how do you get the education to be able to do that? Do we have courses that cover that? And some universities have some international relations associated, but others don't, and they still have that very much that technical focus. In the evolved aspect, there's universities, you know, traditional places of education have been teaching cybersecurity, very broad sense of cybersecurity. Is it actually preparing them for the workforce? I'd argue a lot of the units do not. Very broad and very general. And that just goes to the understanding of the universities. And they do, a lot of universities are starting to work more and more with employment partners. But those partners also have specific requirements. It might be a telecommunications, it might be a banking organization. They have very, very, very set requirements of what they want their graduates to be. And so it's not necessarily helping out the mums and dads businesses or the medium-sized businesses who need other types of cybersecurity expertise. in that space. Another exciting part of the Australian aspect of Australia, the cybersecurity education system, is the TAFE. So tertiary education, yeah, vocational education. The TAFEs have a uniform cert four in cybersecurity. So I can study, theoretically, I can study in Queensland, so TAFE Queensland, and move across to Western Australia, and I'd have the same units of competency that they're called as I would require in WA as I would in Queensland. And that's a very positive model, because that's been around now for 5 years, the TAFE. Well, when it first started, people did not know, like employers didn't know what the students are going to come out with, what skill sets they're going to come out with. So it was very, people were very cautious about it. But now they're seeing that the students have really, really good experiences and skill sets, which is just being developed more and more. And as the cohorts go through, it reinforces those education systems. So overall, I think there's been an evolution in the understanding of cybersecurity itself, but also cybersecurity education in what is required. And that multifaceted, multidisciplinary focus is essential for any program within Australia.
I think that's excellent. And I think that you've really gone into detail on a couple of those points. Now, I want to go back. You mentioned something, which I love your analogy about cybersecurity as medicine. And you raise a great point, which I'll explain why in a second. So you explain that, you know, you don't just say, okay, I want to go into medicine. Okay, what part of medicine? Doctor, nurse, like you said, specialist, all of those things. And that was a conversation that I was having with people, like, hey, like I want to work in cybersecurity. I'm like, oh, cool. Like, what do you want to do? And they're like, well, I don't know about the roles that are really out there. And that was sort of the impetus to when we created Destination Cyber. So people who don't know, we also have a second podcast, which is produced by KBI Media. It's not hosted by me. It's hosted by Lachlan. And he goes around and he interviews people about different types of roles, what it's like, characteristics, because what I was finding, Adam, is so many people like, hey, like you do this cool cyber thing. But then when I asked them like, well, what do you want to work in? People couldn't really give me that answer. And I said, well, there's a gap there, isn't there? Because people do want to work in cybersecurity and there's all these things saying, yeah, you should work in it. But, well, there's a lot of different roles and some of them are technical and a lot aren't as well. So we wanted to be able to provide some light and clarity around the roles, types of characteristics of being in those roles as well. And sort of painting a picture that cybersecurity is not all being about technical in a basement and doing those things. Like, yes, there are elements of that, but a lot of it actually is quite forward-facing and being out there and speaking to people and in the community. So that's something that we wanted to shed light on, and hopefully that is going to drive more people to take up careers in cybersecurity, but also know like which field and which avenue do I want to go into to make sure that that's, you know, the right thing that they should be doing. So I think you are right. And even when I was talking to Lachlan and when he was saying like, I want to work in cyber, I'm like, well, what do you want to do? He's like, I don't even know what's out there. And that was sort of when we said, okay, let's develop a podcast for you to interview people in the space about what they do. Because I think a lot of people, when you think about medicine, they just think doctor, nurse straight off the bat because that's what we've always known. And because it is an immature field, hasn't always been around, people don't really know the different roles. So I think that that's really important that we're focusing on that. Do you think, though, as well, that how we've traditionally advertised cyber, it's been about a dude in a hoodie, not talking to people, being socially awkward? Now, there's definitely elements of that, but there's a lot of other people out there that are not like that at all. So I think maybe have we done a disservice, though, to really sell ourselves to other people?
The classic image is a male in a dark room with a hood. I don't know. They're obviously always cold because they're always in a hoodie. They're not in a t-shirt. I think that image and just the, I see people, and when I talk to people about cybersecurity, and people go, what do you do? And I start talking about cybersecurity and their faces glaze over, the same as when people say they work in IT. It's very, very similar. They have a misunderstanding of what cybersecurity is. And it really does come down to that technical focus, but I think it is a wholly technical field and it's all about coding and hacking. And they say, oh, you sit there hacking. And you're like, well, what do you think that actually means in that? And so they don't understand it. And I think there is definitely an image problem in cybersecurity. And I think part of the marketing that's required in getting more people in, because what we need is a diversity of thought. That's critical in any industry. but especially in cybersecurity where it's very analytical and in multiple roles, once again, like we said, having diversity of thought, so that is a diverse multicultural, male, female, whatever it might be, environment where you have all these different personalities and ideas into a melting pot, and then you're able to constructively move forward as an organization or as a society as a whole, and bring people in, because we are missing out on people. And this is every industry. Like, I know being so concentrated on cybersecurity and the digital space and areas of work, is that we can become siloed and just focus on ourselves. There are skills crisis out there in other areas. And so we have to almost have a war cry to bring people in, because we're fighting for different people's skills and abilities. And we want to get the best and brightest, because we want to protect Australia. And that's ultimately the goal of a lot of the roles that people they're doing. They're protecting their organization, and they're ultimately protecting Australia and Australians. And that's the lens that we also need to think about, is that we're in a cyber warfare. We are in a battle for what we believe in as a society and what we fight for as a society in the digital realm, which is brand new as well. This is brand new, like a movie, cutting edge, where, you know, nation states and organizations and individuals are trying to push their own ideologies and crime against Australia and Australian organizations. And this is why we need such a strong focus on education, is to develop the current workforce and the future workforce to essentially protect the economy and protect Australians and their livelihoods. I've heard too many stories of people losing their livelihoods to small businesses, especially to phishing scams, for example, where a classic one is changing the bank details and ringing them up and saying, oh, you know, we'll change our invoice details. You'll get a reminder email. Just feel free to call me. And so the small business gets the invoice as they got from the phone call and the email follow-up. Everything looks legitimate. They send through the money and they never see it again. I know of one case where the company lost $500,000 and another company lost $60,000. They're people that I know directly. That is shocking. That can destroy families. That can destroy people's lives. And that is where cybersecurity, with the necessity for cybersecurity, it becomes nasty, because, you know, no one wants people to lose money. No one wants businesses to go out of, like, it might be that they are a small business and they can't run anymore and they can't feed their family. Like, that's the importance. That's what we're fighting with and dealing with currently in the environment.
Yeah, I know. It's brutal. And I think the other problem is now that people are, all the spoofing that's happening, they're like, oh, but Westpac, you know, told me this. And then they've willingly then transferred the money, and then banks are turning around and saying, well, no, you've willingly transferred it. We're not going to reimburse you. That's another very interesting conversation, which I want to get into on another podcast. But I love what you're saying. This is what really gets me about our space a little bit. So we say, okay, let's move away from dude in hoodie, da-da-da-da, you know how we've always sort of advertised it. But then what do I constantly see? People advertising conferences, guys in hoodies, or all of their stock images is the guy in the hoodie, or the guy pressing his finger up against the glass that we've all seen, or the guy that wears a balaclava, or the hand coming out of the computer to be like, oh, that's what a hacker does. Like, it's completely fabricated view of what hackers are and what they do. But this is the thing that I have a problem with. And then the other point to that is there's so many people saying, okay, we need to get more women in it, in the field. I get that. We need diversity of thought. But do you think that maybe women just don't like the field? Now, I say this because why isn't anyone going on saying, oh, well, we need more male makeup artists? This is where I'm just looking and trying to flip the conversation on its head, just so we can have a very open discussion about this, because these are the two biggest things that I see as a point of contention in our space. We say that we should advertise it differently, but then no one really does that. And it's just, we'll just default to what we know. And then we say we need more women and all this type of stuff, which I get, but then maybe women just don't like the field.
Well, that's a very good point. Not everyone suited to every job, and not everyone wants to be in certain industries because they're not industries. I guess when we talk about cybersecurity, I guess because it's so large once again, so as opposed to a makeup artist, which is a very specific role, there are different roles for different people in cybersecurity. So it might not be that you're technical. I can't code to save my life, to be honest. When I started to background on myself, I started in an IT degree a very long time ago and realized I couldn't code. It could have been French to me, and my brain just didn't work that way. And I was talking to the university, and they had a different degree. And I said, look, well, what's this? And they said, oh, this is, it's called business informatics, which is a study of information and information systems. So basically, instead of being the builder per se, you're the architect. And so you design the system. And all of that I understood. I understood how to build the system,
right,
how to design the system, and what should be in the system for it to work. So then, you know, that plan can be given to the programmer or, in the case of the builder. And that was for me. So not everyone's suited for every role, but there are so many roles inside of security that are available that people should, if they want, they should be able to find a role. So going back to that international relations and the different roles in policy development, you might work for a vendor in marketing. You might do something like yourself, for example. You might run multimedia and digital channels for cybersecurity. There's so many different areas that people could look at, but we need to communicate that. And that's one of the things that we're not doing as an industry, is breaking those stereotypes and trying to bring new people in. But, you know, this is, once again, getting women involved and young girls involved in STEM is an issue in itself. And the government is always talking about it and trying to bring people in. And how do we bring the people in? So it's not just cybersecurity, but it is a broader societal issue. But I think there are definitely roles available to people within cybersecurity, if you be it, you know, if you're a male, female, whatever, or any background, that there would be a role that you'd be suited for because of the multifaceted, multidisciplinary nature of cybersecurity these days and how it is getting embedded into everyday life. So cybersecurity you can view as a horizontal that goes across all industries. So all industries need cybersecurity, and there's multi areas within that, different roles. And so it's really communicating to people, young people, an understanding of cybersecurity, that's not just being in hoodies and hacking away, but there are other things that you can do, like a digital forensics, for example. You could do threat investigations, which is different again. You can do, once again, policy, as I mentioned. You could work for a vendor. You could create apps, whatever it might be. There's many, many different ways that you can be involved in the cybersecurity industry and have a fulfilling career and a diverse career.
Yeah, no, I get it. And I think that those are the things I think people need to be more focused on, perhaps. So, I mean, like, I started as a reporting analyst, like a decade ago now, and then I've obviously done various roles and then fell into doing this type of role. But that's what I like to do, and that's what I found I was good at doing. So I think there is a bit of an exploration sort of phase in there where you may start doing something and then you'll say, oh, hey, I didn't know that was a thing. Like, to be honest, I don't know if what I was doing was really a thing, so I just created it and made it a thing. So I guess there's, because it's still new, right? There's not like, oh, it's a carved out role and this is what you have to do, like, you know, in law, for example. So I think it's great to have this discussion, because these are the discussions that I have day in, day out with people in the field, people looking to recruit talent in the field, as well as people looking to, you know, understand more about it. And these are some of the fallacies that I have to sort of break down and say, well, no, actually, it doesn't really work like that. So I think it's great to have this discussion, because these are things that people want to know. But you raise an interesting point before, Adam, and you say, look, how do we break these stereotypes? Like, do you have any sort of like examples on how we break it? Or like, I know that's a bit of a hard question to always answer, but I think this is where I want to get into it, because this is what people want to know and how they can apply perhaps maybe some of your ideas and how they break the stereotype.
The key is understanding what cybersecurity is and what the messages you're trying to share. So if you're an educator, for example, at a school or marketing to a group, is it really what area of cybersecurity are you looking at? And to break down stereotypes is not easy, but there needs to be a considered process to, let's get away from the hooded person in a dark room. That's not helping advertise cybersecurity. We need to get more advertising, marketing around what a cybersecurity career really looks like. Similar to an example might be the military. You know, you go on the military websites and it'll be a day in the life of a naval officer, and it'll go through and I'll have different, you know, different pictures and videos of all the different things, of all the tasks that people undertake. So it's not just your day job, for example. That's what they're trying to communicate in. And a lot of that advertising is that you're not stuck behind a desk, you're having an exciting career and you're moving around and jumping out of helicopters or whatever it might be. So we need a considered advertising of what cybersecurity is, and actually come from government, should come from organisation. But it is hard because then it may take away from other areas. A key part of that as well is within the OSO, a general awareness, and I don't like the word awareness, but I don't like awareness, cyber awareness courses or things like that, because that doesn't change people's mindsets. I'm aware that I shouldn't cross the road when the light is red. When the little man or person or light, whatever it might be, is red, you shouldn't cross. But I'll look and I'll see the car and it's, you know, we'll say 50 meters away, and I'll cross the road anyway. I'm aware of that. Now, I shouldn't do it. So
because you're jaywalking, apparently it's illegal. How you can get fined? You can get fined for it in Australia. It's ridiculous.
Yep. I haven't seen anyone get fined, but yeah, you can get fined. So making the fundamentals. So having a concerted education program of what cybersecurity is at a whole nation level, where societal level, where they're taught the fundamentals of cybersecurity. So once again, being aware that, and this is what I talk about a lot in my talks at conferences, nationally and internationally and whatever else, is we don't understand threat in Australia. And especially, I'm from Canberra. People in Canberra do not understand threat. I'll cross the road, I'll walk out at night, I'm not scared at that time. So we need to be aware that bad people are out there. There is evil out there. Rachel Noble, who's head of the Australian Signals Directorate from the public service, has said that. Like, she battles bad and evil people every day. That's what her organisation does to protect Australia. So we don't need to think about it at night time. We need to understand that there are bad people out there. And then you build that foundation of cybersecurity. So I'm getting to the stereotype in a moment. You build that understanding of cybersecurity, that understanding of threat and what it is, and then the importance that's ingrained in people, and that there are those multiple roles. And people start to look at it similar to medicine, where people, I would expect that most people would regard the medical field in high regard because of the importance and the help that it gives society and the help that it gives people in general. It's there to support you and to make sure you are living a healthy life and stay alive. So you start with a foundational aspect of what cybersecurity is. You build upon people's understanding of it at a national, at a societal state. And then from that, you break those stereotypes into here are all the different roles, here are all the different jobs, here's all the requirements, here's why it's important, because we're protecting Australia, we're protecting the economy, things like that, blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly you have a seismic shift in understanding. Now, it does take time to build upon that, but as soon as you start building those foundations, you'll start chipping away at it little by little, and suddenly you find in 5 years you might have a totally different view of cybersecurity, like what we've seen in the past 5 years of people not understanding anything about cybersecurity or the word cybersecurity. If you were to bring up the word cybersecurity at the pub, someone would have a story about something that has happened to them, a friend,
always,
or what they saw on the news. So therefore, we have to understand that cybersecurity is now a normal part of everyday life.
Yeah, okay, I love this. I love what you're saying. Okay, this is interesting. You make a great point before. You said Australians don't understand threat. What do you mean by that specifically when you say that? I'm curious to know.
So threat, once again, that people are out there to take advantage of you in whatever way it might be. So it might be monetary. It might be a criminal organisation wanting access to certain things. A great example of threat is, or a society that lives and understands threat, is Israel, for example. That is a nation that lives under constant existential threat of being bombed or whatever it might be, rockets flying in. You see the news, the world news, there'll be an article on it. That society, and they've built a very, very strong, extremely strong cybersecurity ecosystem to protect themselves, because they are constantly under attack from different facets in society, in different organizations, nation states, for example. So when I say threat in an Australian context, I think we have to understand that A, there's bad people out there, but there's also organizations, so nation states, criminal organizations that have their own agendas and wanted things out of us, be it money, be it information, our data. That's another key thing that Australians need to be aware of, and I think it's coming out more and more, just the importance of our data. I won't go into it too much because otherwise we'll get taken over on that conversation, but understanding that there's people out there that want to take advantage of us and possibly do us harm in one way or another. And I don't think we really understand that, which is good. And I'm not saying So it's a positive that we live in a society where we feel safe to go about our business, our everyday business. But at the same time, we can be a bit lackluster and in the Australian culture, being relaxed due to certain things which we do need to address. So it's a very good thing that we live in a society where we do feel safe and we are relaxed in our general stance. But at the same time, that can create too much relaxation and not concentrating on the fact that, that email that I just clicked on, I probably shouldn't have clicked on it.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying. Do you think as well it's because typically, there's a couple of things in there and some of the points that I'm sort of what's going through my mind as you're speaking here is we're a smaller nation, so there's only, 26 million people, which is quite small for a country our size in particular. So we're naturally, even historically, a very trusting nation. So there's a bit of that. Smaller. And then also there's the element of the whole she'll be right side of things, that relaxed nature, which can be a double-edged sword. Like it's great, if you're coming here for a holiday, it's great. But then it's like, well, it can also do us a disservice at the same time. So I guess it's finding that balance. And those are the things that when people say, why is Australia like that? I think it's just because we are, we're a trusting nation. We want people to think that they're doing the right thing. But like I said, there are big, bad and people out there that exist, and there are, nation states, and there are these criminal organizations that do exist that do want the worst for people, not the best.
Yep, no, exactly.
Do you think as well, though, so if I want to look at maybe another angle, countries like you mentioned before, Israel, but then also like the United States. So I think when 9/11 happened, they were also more heightened when it comes to like terrorism and things like that. So from a national security perspective, they talk about it a lot more because of that. And because we haven't really faced adversity like that before, maybe it's just not at the forefront of our mind. Now, I'm not saying this is what needs to happen for people to take it seriously. I'm just saying that may be why we're more relaxed, because we haven't been impacted by something of that nature before.
Correct. And normally, just general nature of people, you normally don't concentrate on things unless it affects you or your family or friends. Yesterday, you might not have been concerned about cybersecurity at all because, you hear about all these breaches and everything, but it hasn't affected you or your family. And all of a sudden tomorrow, your mum, for example, has been scammed out of $50,000.
Yeah.
That's just broad hypothetical, but all of a sudden you're going to be focused on cybersecurity and you're going to want to know why it happened and things like that. So, it's definitely not that everyone should be on constant alert.
No.
But I need to have an understanding that when doing certain things, when you're online, when you're doing different activities, that there are risks associated, and just take a double check, listen to your gut in these things and don't just click on things. Always think, oh, that looks a bit weird, or why would I be doing that? I get SMSs all the time around different things, and the way things are worded are getting smarter and smarter. So essentially a lot of the phishing scams and things like that, essentially it's psychology, it's social engineering. So what it's doing is it's utilizing a known and a beneficial knowledge base, being psychology, and they're using it for bad. Same as people use technology, same, and you can use it for good or bad. They're using social engineering, and the techniques are getting smarter and smarter. And with AI and different technologies associated, the way that messages are conveyed are getting more and more convincing. So we have to be more and more vigilant on this. And no one's perfect, and they've tested in the US, for example, they've tested people who are at the highest levels of security and look at these things every day, and they will still fall for phishing scams. So nobody's perfect in that. And what we also have to acknowledge is that when something happens, like someone gets scammed, they don't feel guilt and they're not blamed for it. The same as if someone robs your house, you can't stop them from robbing your house. They have actively chosen to rob your house. You don't get blamed for it. People shouldn't get blamed necessarily for cyber attacks, and that's probably individuals. So that's not the case necessarily for organizations, and I won't touch on that a lot, but organizations obviously have regulations and laws and the other things that they need to abide by to protect people's data and their own information and things like that. That's different to what I'm saying in a general sense, where people need to understand that if they are scammed, this is one of the issues as well, is they say the percentage of people over 60 when scammed, so be it an internet scam, phone scam, text scam, they'll continue to pay out of embarrassment. And often the only reason it gets stopped is because the bank
notices where the money's going to is highlighted as a scam, and they actually stop it going through in some cases, or the police are notified with that. You know, people have spent $100,000 on just because they're embarrassed to say, I need help. And that's something else that we need to break in a general educational sense. So that's probably more just going back to the education part, very much more of a general education of society and a way that we're changing that people don't get blamed on. You got hacked, it's your fault. Well, it's not necessarily their fault. And I'd say it isn't their fault, and that people need to understand that, and we need to work together to solve these issues. Once again, it is slightly different from major organisations. They do have laws and regulations that they need to abide by, but they organisations, I do feel for it. I feel for all the people working in the field, in the coalface, is because they're trying to protect 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 points of access to their systems. A malicious person only needs to find one point.
Exactly. And companies have duties of care, right? So they're a little bit more obligated than like a consumer that potentially was targeted and then they're impacted by it. And yeah, it is sad. It's awful. And I hear these stories all the time. And you are right. They said like going down to the local pub and then straight away you're like, oh, I'm in cyber. And then straight away you get like 10 stories, like straight off the bat.
Yeah, which is good. Well, it's good that it's being communicated, but we need to have the right messages. And that's where people get confused about cybersecurity or some of the aspects associated with it. In that general sense, I definitely do believe we need more societal fundamental education. I know, for example, in Singapore, on bus stops, in buildings, there's posters around cybersecurity and how to protect yourself. Having those types of campaigns to inform, in a general sense, society around cybersecurity and how to protect themselves is essential moving forward. And then that also helps promote people to get into cybersecurity and into different aspects of cybersecurity. And not all roles are 100% cybersecurity as well. It might be only a small aspect, but a very critical aspect of their role. And developing, having more teachers, having more educators, lecturers, PhD students. And once again, cybersecurity is so new that a lot of people who do different courses at a university, for example, don't have honours, first class or second class honours, to be able to do a PhD. So universities need to adapt to that because they're missing out on all these people who would do into cybersecurity and possibly teach cybersecurity in the future once they finish their PhD because they don't have first class honours in that. We need to move away from it. Obviously, they need to have certain academic rigmarole for these PhD programs. I'm not saying that. But I do believe that there's so many degrees that don't have first-class honours or second-class honours associated with them that then they can't actually participate as a researcher or a lecturer and teachers. Because we need, obviously, teachers teach the next generation of professionals. They might be in a private organisation, for example, or a vendor, or through a university or a vet for the TAFE. We really do need to develop the next generation of teachers, but not even the next generation of teachers. We need the generation now. We need people now being made available. So maybe we need programs where the universities let researchers or PhD people work part-time and do it, and they don't have that traditional model where it's 3 years and you have to sit at the desk at the university and do that because it's not actually required. You know, PhD programs have evolved from being 9 to 10 years, for example, a while ago because they didn't have access to the information. You wanted access to some results of something from a set university that did research into something. You'd have to go to the university or request access to that thing. And so you might actually have to go to a certain library or a certain data source and you'd have to go there, you'd have to look at it physically, you know, write some notes, do whatever, and then go back and continue your research. Whereas now everything's at our fingertips. You know, you can access all the journals in the world from your phone, for example. And so catching up on the way that certain things are taught, especially things like PhDs, where we have to live in the 21st century. And if they want people coming into that field and in the field such as cybersecurity in and doing research into these important things and being able to then teach, we need to figure out new models for this and to be practical. And the same as organisations had to adapt to COVID and working from home. Many people now work from home and it's a normal thing. You know, 3 years ago, it was frowned upon. or 4 years ago. It was frowned upon. So, and while we can't do that, no, we can't have an entire workforce work from home, nothing will happen and society will collapse. Well, we saw that it didn't, and everyone stayed, you know, hopefully gainfully employed and was able to manage working from home or whatever it might be to keep everything going. So it's that kind of mindset as well. So we need a future-focused and adaptive mindset to be able to get what we need currently. And that's not just in CYBER, that can just be in a general education sense as well, is that we need to adapt from the traditional methods that have been viewed and used and utilize new methods of education, new methods of training in that and being more adaptable and flexible, because that's the society we live in. We live in a digital society where you have to be adaptable and flexible in everything you do.
Yeah, no, I love this. And I really love what you're saying because it just makes so much sense to me. And it's really great to speak to someone that is on the same wavelength that I'm on and that I think about. And you make a great point around Singapore and their advertising. So I want to, before we maybe touch on the soft skills, now I want to know maybe from you, like, you know, let's talk about the government. Like, what do you think about their contribution towards better education?
I think the government's getting there. Like I mentioned, you know, I met with the government at the time about cybersecurity and initiatives in cybersecurity education. And it was they didn't understand cybersecurity. So it's definitely changed. Now that we've got another minister for cybersecurity, Claire O'Neill, and she's doing a fantastic job in promoting and making mainstream cybersecurity. I think she's probably had the busiest job of many of the ministers who have held the cybersecurity hat. And the most public, definitely, of the roles because of the recent breaches and things like that. Government can do in funding, and that they're already doing. So it's really looking at all the different initiatives that they do run and then understanding, well, what's next? There's obviously they have the strategy and they're actually building the current cybersecurity strategy to build it will be released and will have an educational factor and skills factor. But obviously there's always more that can be done. There's always more funding that can be put forward. It's a matter of prioritising and understanding what the responsibility government has, what responsibility organisations have, what responsibility education providers have. And the current programs that they have, I think, are very, very good. I do believe that the focus on cybersecurity has increased within the key departments that it needs to be focused on. But I do believe they are missing out on that, and they might focus on it in this strategy, is that broad societal information campaign around cybersecurity. You know, it's common, like people always refer to it, we need a cyber slip, slop, slap. Many, many people are familiar with slip, slop, slap, the sunscreen, for sun cancer health. We need something like that, but we can't just copy that because obviously that's a very specific thing. I believe we need to have new ways of communicating that message that is also still very, very successful. The same utilizing the same methodology, not necessarily the same messaging. All of that, that's where I think government needs to work more on, is having that concerted message around that and also publicizing the information that they have. So they do have gov.au and it has a wealth of knowledge and what to do if you're scammed, what to do if you want to know more about cybersecurity education. There's websites for AusCyber, for example, that have different areas of jobs and roles. I think one of the big confusions within cybersecurity as well, which the government can help with, is naming conventions of cybersecurity roles. That is one of the major issues in recruiting cybersecurity people, is that there's 10 different names for the exact same role in cybersecurity. So one of the things that I did put forward to government quite a while ago is there's a thing called the NICE framework, which goes through all the different job roles associated with cybersecurity facing the US from the US Department of Commerce. And besides what it is, which is a framework, it has set names for different roles. And so use that as a dictionary, for example, or like a dictionary for, okay, from now on, you know, we're going to call a cyber analyst, and this is what it's going to be. And this is the actual job description associated with that role. Because if the government starts doing it, then contractors start doing it, recruitment agencies start doing it, and then broader, other organizations will start doing it because it becomes the lexicon of what those roles should be called. And we're slowly moving that way, but we're not quite there yet. So there still is this confusion because you don't call a GP something else. A GP is a GP. A cardiologist is a cardiologist. Like, but the naming conventions have been locked in with cybersecurity. You could have a cyber threat analyst, you could have a cybersecurity analyst, you could have a cyber analyst, a different number of other terms, which mean the exact same thing. And that creates confusion in the market and confusion in education as well. But what are you actually educating for? But yeah, what role are you educating for and at what level? So that's where the government, I think, as well could start supporting that, is that naming conventions in a way within their own government departments, because then that will create more standardization. So they could create standardization of naming conventions, not forcing people to use different things, because that's fine. We won't go that far, because obviously when you go see a cardiologist, you want to know exactly that you are seeing a cardiologist, and there's rules and regulations around that. There's no real rules and regulations around certain roles in cybersecurity. You know, I could just make one up tomorrow and put an advertisement out for it, and suddenly that role, that job work role suddenly exists, even though it's probably a copy of, you know, four other work roles. But overall, I think they can focus on the message, focus on funding the right things, and don't always get the same information from the same organisations and people. I think we can have a bit of groupthink in cybersecurity, in the people that may be used, who are experts, and there's no reason not to use the experts in their fields, but we need to go broader and make sure that we're not using the same people in different committees and forums and things like that, because ultimately you do get groupthink in one way or another. So breaking that groupthink, once again, diversity of thought in all these things and listening to what's happening on the ground, not just what people think is happening. Having data on everything is important, because you're trying to make policy decisions, funding decisions, where are you going to use public money? We should have data behind this, a lot of these aspects, and I don't think we do. There's not a lot of data around cybersecurity and cybersecurity education in a lot of those things. So that's another thing, is trying to capture that data, actually having not just hearsay of what I think, but here's what the data says and shows.
Mm. Totally hear what you're saying. And I think those are great points that people should be considering. And I know what you mean around not just going to the same people, or else we're going to keep getting the same results, which hasn't been successful so far. So okay. I'm curious now, you mentioned before about soft skills. Now I'm really interested on that topic because, again, I've spoken to people about this, but then, I've had people in the past like sort of roll their eyes like, oh, well, you know, if you're not super technical, like you're not a valid person in the field. And I've got a real problem with that. And I think that those people potentially maybe feel threatened because they believe that's their way of feeling more important over other people. And I think it really does need to be addressed. And it's something that, again, dealing with human beings is by far the most hardest thing. So people sit there and talk about salespeople, but doing sales is hard. You're dealing with people and their emotions. They're not configured a certain way. People's feelings don't make sense a lot of the time. So when you can communicate and you are leveraging soft skills, that to me is inherently harder than technical capability. And I think that people need to understand that it is valuable and it's needed, and it's not something that should be sort of laughed at, that I have seen people over the years speak to people in that sort of manner.
I think it doesn't matter how technical you are. If you can't communicate to people and certain issues, and you can't think about things. And I know a lot of organizations have policies associated with that. There's a couple of swear words involved around the people that they won't in, because they have certain policies around that. You know, unspoken policies around if you've got a bad attitude, I'll say, probably a nice way of putting it, they won't hire you. Which is great, because that's what we need. There's not, just because you're good at something doesn't mean you're right for the role and fit for the organization. But when I talk about soft skills, I guess it's those critical factors of being able to communicate. Being able to write a report, being able to, if you are super technical, being able to say what the issue is, and also understanding the difference in issues. So it might be, you know, you might find a bug in the system and it'll cost $100 million, for example, which is, you know, hypothetical, pulling different numbers out. And you go to your manager or the CEO or whoever it might be, and they're trying to deal with a hostile takeover of $500 million. But what are they going to prioritize, the $100 million issue or the $500 million issue? It's going to be the $500 million issue first and foremost, because that's the big issue. And you need to be able to understand that. So you need problem solving, you need critical thinking, you need communication, but you also need an understanding of the importance and reality and how organizations work. A lot of people walk into organizations in general sense and think they know everything. No one knows everything. Not one person knows everything about everything. So having that humility and that empathy and understanding are critical skills, like just being able to work in a workplace, working teams, you know, have someone say, I don't think you're right, and be able to take that and then move on and not take, you know, not take massive offense to it, just go, look, I disagree with you. Those are the skill sets that are coming through in some ways in certain organizations, not organizations, in certain people who are joining the workforce without having an understanding of how to work in teams, how to take constructive criticism, how to think critically, how to problem solve, and how to communicate. You know, they're all key, and being empathetic. They're all key soft skills that aren't necessarily taught at school or university, but are important to working in a workforce, in the workforce in general, and especially in cybersecurity where the communication aspect, especially where you do have highly technical areas and you do have management areas and policy areas, then trying to communicate the message between the two is essential and why things are important and being succinct in what you're writing, not write a 100-page report when really all they want is a 1-page brief.
So, so true. Just one last question. Because I have spoken to people on the show at length about the technical versus people who are not so technical, where does this air of importance come from people who are super technical that I'm better than you because I'm more technical than you? Where do you think it comes from, though?
I think you know, in essence, it would be in a form of insecurity. But that depends on the individual and the situation. I guess people like to have things over other people. Certain personalities do as well. So it could be a personality type, or it just could be an insecurity where you feel like you need to tell people that you are more important. So the other is just a pure misunderstanding of what the cybersecurity field is, that it has evolved and changed and developed over the years. And it isn't just a purely technical field where the technical skills are the key part. Now, obviously, they're very, very crucial and definitely not taken away from the people who do all those skills and have those skill sets and then that work. It is critical and very, very important. But it isn't the only part of cybersecurity that is important as well. And that's what people have to come to understand, is that there's multiple pieces, and they are one piece of the puzzle, and they are a big piece and a very, very important piece and a critical piece. But they also understand that they are, as a whole, and is, you know, a broad statement of a lot of the technical areas is the problem that we have now. You know, the internet and communications and things like that were all built by engineers, very, very talented engineers who built everything going back to this concept of trust. So, you know, a simple example would be a computer and a printer communicating. The computer goes, I'm looking for a printer. The printer goes, I'm a printer. And goes back to the computer and says, I'm a printer, I can print for you. There's not, this is very, very simplistic, so for everyone rolling their eyes, you know, bear with me. It was built on trust. And so a lot of the very baseline things that we created in the infrastructure of technology, of telecommunications technology, was built on trust and not on security. And that's where security by design has become such an important feature, and trying to push organizations and governments and everyone else to understand security by design and what that actually means. So embedding that in, because I know a key example would be a banking organization which wanted to be one of the first to have an app, for example, on phones, an iPhone app. And they built it knowing there was massive security, knowing there was massive security flaws because they wanted to be first to market. And so they made a business choice, once again, going back to that $100 million issue versus $500 million issue. They made a business choice to release and to fix the issue as they went through. That doesn't help in a whole sense, in the holistic, let's try and create a safe environment, open, safe, and secure internet. That's the vision of Australia and Western society, is an open, safe, and secure internet where people can do business, people can operate, people can share information safely and without fear. The key is there to ensure that everything's built now with security by design. The people who have that, I'm technical and I'm better than you, is, I think it's an attitude and it needs to be broken, because that's probably an old attitude, and a lot of organizations don't put up with that anymore. You'll get fired. You won't get hired. If they don't think you have the right attitude, you will not be. And even in the modern day workforce, that shouldn't be put up with. Bullying and things like that is unacceptable in the modern day workforce. It does happen way too much, and it's something that I feel very strongly about at schools and in in organisations that everyone should always be feel safe and valued. And I think that's a critical thing for any organisation and for government to push as well, feeling safe and valued in whatever situation you are, be it a school, be it an organisation, be it in a university, that type of atmosphere.
And I think it's just, you are right, they are important, but they're not more important than anyone else. And I think it's more that, yes, you're important, what you do is valuable, but it's not more valuable than what anyone else is bringing to the table. So it's more so this air of, I have more value than you as in the other person. I think that's what I've got the big problem with. So yes, you are right. And I absolutely love that. So thank you so much for your wonderful insights, Adam. I think we could have easily spoken for another hour. I don't think I even got to half of the things that I wanted to ask you because we were sort of ranting a lot about things, which makes an excellent interview. Is there any sort of final thoughts or closing comments you'd like to leave our audience with today?
Final thoughts is, for those who are in cybersecurity, continue what you're doing. It is critical what we're doing. There is a high burnout rate in cybersecurity. There is a very, very high rate of self-medication, meaning either drugs or alcohol, especially in management. Be kind to each other. Understand that. I think that's something that does need to be addressed, is the high stress of operational staff in cybersecurity that is constantly on. There's no switch. You can't switch off because you're constantly thinking about that threat or what's happening in the organization, or that you need to address this certain thing. And the stress that comes under it with the budgets and the responsibilities, especially with our CISOs, for example, that's something that needs to be looked at in very much detail from government, from educators and researchers, academics and organizations, about how to effectively address this in the health and safety, once again, of our employees, of the cybersecurity workforce. Because otherwise, once again, people will get burnt out and they'll find another job. They'll go elsewhere, and good on them for doing it, because you need to look after yourself and your well-being and your families if you have one. So thinking about well-being and health and safety and how do we address that, but continue to understand that it is an evolving field and there's many other jobs. You are not stuck in one job. There's many, many, many roles out there that you can undertake. And if you're looking towards a role in cybersecurity, ultimately the world's your oyster. There are very, very many roles and opportunities in technical, non-technical, as we mentioned, roles. So good luck to everyone who is in cybersecurity and wants to get into cybersecurity. And more than happy to do another podcast to get through the rest of your questions, of course.
Yes, always. So I think that was excellent, and I absolutely love that. Yes, most definitely. So thank you so much, Adam, for taking the time out of your busy schedule to sharing your insight with the audience today. Really appreciate it. Thanks for tuning in. We hope that you found today's episode useful and you took away a few key points. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get our latest episodes.
This podcast is brought to you by MERCSEC, the specialists in security, search, and recruitment solutions. Visit MERCSEC.com to connect today.
If you'd like to find out how KBI can help grow your cyber business, then please head over to KBI.digital.
This podcast was brought to you by KBI.media, the voice of cyber.